Familiarity breeding contempt in the Bible? Yes, and in terms of freedom. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church looking at life through the most ancient of all Christian fabrics, namely Armenian Orthodoxy. This is the 243rd anniversary of the United States of America and the 578th episode of The Next Step, inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting The Next Step with Father Voskin. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Voskin brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Welcome and happy 4th of July. More proper, happy Independence Day here in the States. Yes, one of the earliest jokes I remember as a kid. Yeah, we'd play it. Do they have 4th of July in Canada? Question, you know. Do they have 4th of July in Canada? Well, of course they do. They have a 3rd of July. They have a 5th of July. They have a 4th of July. Of course, the question is, do they celebrate it? And of course, today, 4th of July, is the celebration of independence, 243 years of the United States of America, the longest living democracy, from what I understand. I think I'm not a political scientist, but I know that I've heard that here and there, that it's one of the longest, if not the longest, existing democracy. And of course, it's questionable these last few years. It's been very difficult. 1984, George Orwell wrote this in 1948. And, you know, when 1984 came along, I remember that there was a lot of people that were looking at it and said, well, we're far from it. But when you look at all of the different things that are going on right now, when you look at how news is being manipulated, when you look at how fake news, we never even thought about it, when you look at the checks and balance systems that we have in place, you know, three branches of government here in the United States and one checking the other. And then you had what's called the Fourth Estate, like basically you had freedom of press, and the press was an esteemed institution. In other words, you went to the press because you knew that the press would at least have the courage to write things down and question certain things. And now we're seeing that, well, that freedom has been pushed and that freedom has been abused. In fact, just look at a very local level, very, very local level. I'll talk about what's going on here in the West Coast of the United States. We have some guy who's printing a tabloid under the guise of journalism, more like yellow journalism, basically bashing church leadership. And there's a lot of comical stuff about it, but what's not comical is how seriously that people are taking this kind of stuff. And because it's in print, because at some point people respected print. And this guy basically makes allegations and puts a question mark at the end of it. So it's not like he's accusing, you know, there's no libel, there's no slander. It's just like, I'm asking the questions. Well, come on, you know, Father Voskin, a criminal? Yeah. No, I'm not in this. I'm not in this thing. It's just, I'm just using my name as the example, you know. See, a criminal, put a question mark on it. Well, it gets your head to start thinking. It plants seeds of doubt, and now people start thinking, oh yeah, well, there's something going on. Oh, you know what? I love, there's an Armenian saying my mom taught me. It's like, if you haven't seen it, don't believe it. And if you, whatever you do see, believe only half of it. And it's so true. As you get older, you realize that how much we are influenced by gossip and hearsay rather than just really searching for the truth. So getting back to the Orwellian idea of this 1984, you know, I was reading this great biography about not just George Orwell, it's the George Orwell 1984. Let me just read to you a small little part. When George Orwell's 1984 was published in the United Kingdom in the heart of the 20th century, one critic wondered how such a timely book could possibly exert the same power over generations to come. 35 years later, when the present caught up, in other words, in 1984, with Orwell's future, and the world was not the nightmare he had described, commentators again predicted that the book's popularity would wane. Another 35 years have elapsed since then, and 1984 remains the book we turn to. When truth is mutilated, language is distorted, power is abused, and we want to know how bad things can get, because someone who lived and died in another era was clear-sighted enough to identify these evils and sufficiently talented to present them in the form of a novel, and goes on so on. 1984 has not just sold tens of millions of copies, it has infiltrated the consciousness of countless people who have never read it. The phrases and concepts of Orwell minted have become essential fixtures of political language, still potent after decades of use and misuse. Newspeak, Big Brother, The Thought Police, Room 101, The 2-Minute Hate, Doublethink, Unperson, Memory Hole, Telescream, 2 + 2 = 5, and The Ministry of Truth. Wow, think about it today. What you see, it may not exist in reality. 2 + 2, you know, is not 5, but we can make it look like 5. In fact, we can make it 5. It's remarkable. What a novel that was. And we're seeing it unfold. And again, we're challenging what's coming to mind is we're seeing the limits of freedom. Yeah, freedom unbridled. You're seeing that it can run amok. And there needs to be some checks and balances, because basically anybody's free to say anything. And I've shared with you many times over this this platform the idea that, you know, you can it's so relative today that, you know, you could hold up a matchstick and say this is God. And if you get 10 people to believe in that, you can form a religion. You could form a nonprofit organization, and you can have your worship services. You can have laws protect you as a religious organization, and so on and so on. And that's one of the costs of being a free democracy. Today, 243 years that this experiment called democracy, the United States of America, is still in full swing. And I personally believe that it is one of the best experiments ever taken. In fact, I've shared with you also that on my wall, along with the picture of Jesus and the religious artifacts, I do have a framed copy of the Declaration of Independence, which was signed in 1776 today, July 4th. And it means a lot. I'll read some of it later on. But I wanted to start off this section of The Next Step with the idea of that's something you probably heard. Familiarity breeds contempt. Think about it for a moment. When you're familiar with something, you don't appreciate it, right? And as somebody who was born here in the United States, who has enjoyed the freedoms, it's very easy, and I could see how people will easily let go of this freedom. Well, it is very easy to have contempt for it, in fact, and to be critical of it. And I'm going to share with you a Bible passage that I think the connection is so real. And this came out in our Bible study the other day. So I've had a couple days since I presented it to the Bible study to let it kind of like, okay, fester in my mind. So I want to share it with you. And it comes to us from the Gospel of Mark. I'm going to be reading from the first first verses of the Gospel of Mark. Okay, Jesus went away from there and came to his own country, and his disciples followed him. And on the Sabbath, he began to teach in the synagogue. And many who heard him were astonished, saying, "Where did this man get all of this?" Well, yeah, you know, this is like the Jesus that they knew. He had come back to his own country. And so now he's preaching, but wait a minute. This is the Jesus that we remember growing up in our midst. Where did he get all this knowledge from? Where did he, how is he talking such? And he says, "What is the wisdom given to him? What mighty works are wrought by his hand? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, and the brother of James and Joseph, and Judas and Simon, and are not his sisters here with us?" And they took offense. Let me read that one sentence again, okay? So they've identified who he is. They've figured out that Jesus is part of the same tradition that they've grown up in, and they know that he's one of the guys, you know, one of the guys down the street, and they remember him, and they remember his relatives, so on. And then it says, and they took offense at him. And Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor except in his own country, and among his own kin, and in his own house. And he could do no mighty works there, except that he laid his hands upon a few sick people and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief." Think about that for a moment. Why did they not believe? Familiarity breeds contempt. This was Jesus, the one they knew. How could anything good come from the kid down the street? From the kid that we saw growing up in our midst? We're too familiar with him. And what happens? What happens when you're too familiar with something? You become too critical. So critical that it's impossible for that thing to function. In this case, Jesus. It was impossible for him to function. They took offense. And what does the scripture say? And he could do no mighty work there, except that he laid his hands upon a few sick people. Familiarity? Yeah, definitely. Contempt there. Let's look at the same passage in the Gospel of Mark. This happens to be a very special one to me. Those next steppers who've listened to me know how important this passage is, but I'm going to refer to a different part. But let me read the entire thing. It comes to us from Luke chapter 4, verses 14 and following. This is right after Jesus has spent the 40 days in the wilderness, and he is now ready to begin his ministry. And the evangelist Luke presents this narrative of what happened. Okay, Jesus returned in the power of the Spirit into Galilee. Okay, so he's now got the power of the Spirit. He's been baptized. After the baptism, he received the power of the Spirit. He's been tempted in the wilderness. And now he returns where? To Galilee. And a report concerning him went out through all the surrounding country. And he taught in their synagogues, being glorified by all. And he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. Now, interesting that the evangelist here makes that extra statement. He came to Nazareth where he had been brought up. And he went to the synagogue as his custom was on the Sabbath day. And he stood up to read. And there was given to him the book of the prophet Isaiah. He opened the book and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. Okay, so far, our hometown boy comes home, okay? He's coming to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. So he's our boy. We know him. We've seen him. We've watched him grow up. And now he comes into the synagogue. He opens up the scriptures. He reads Isaiah. Very good. Everything is good. No problems, okay? Everything's going smoothly. And he reads the mission statement for himself, right? The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He has anointed me. I've been sent to heal the brokenhearted. I have been sent to proclaim release to the captive, recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed. He basically is telling people that, you know, this is the mission that God has ordained him for. But he hasn't made the connection yet. So far, so good. In other words, we haven't connected the dots between this statement, Isaiah's statement, and Jesus standing in front of them. Jesus of Nazareth at this point, right? He closed the book, gave it to the attendant, and sat down. And the eyes of all in the synagogue were fixed on him. And he began to say to them, ready for the connection? Ready for the connect the dots? Here it is. Today, this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. That's the point. Jesus of Nazareth, everyone understands him as Jesus of Nazareth. He's now telling you, I am Jesus the Christ. He has anointed me. This is it. Get with the program, folks. In your presence, this has now been fulfilled. And all spoke well of him and wondered at the gracious words which proceeded out of his mouth. And they said, is not this Joseph's son? Oh, wait a minute. Right? Did you catch that? What was going on over here? They were all fine. Everything was really good. They were in wonder about the gracious words that came from his mouth. And then all of a sudden, wait, isn't this Joseph's son? And he said to them, doubtless you will quote to me this proverb, physician, heal yourself. What we have heard you did at Capernaum, do here in your own country. And he said, truly I say to you, no prophet is accepted in his own country. In other words, what is he saying there? Familiarity breeds contempt. No prophet is accepted in his own country. But in truth, I tell you, there are many widows in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, when there came a great famine over all the land, and Elijah was sent to none of them, but only to Zarephath in the land of Sidon, to a woman who was a widow. And there were many lepers in Israel in the time of the prophet Elisha, and none of them was cleaned, but only Naaman the Syrian. In other words, he's showing that, okay, when these prophets were here, again, they weren't accepted. And so look what happened to them. They went outside of their expected acceptance level. And when they heard this, all in the synagogues were filled with wrath. And they rose up and put him out of the city and led him to the brow of the hill on which their city was built, that they might throw him down headlong. Whoa! 1 minute you're wondering, and then all of a sudden, wow, wrath. They take him out of the synagogue. They take him out to the edge of the city, and there's a cliff, and they're ready to throw him over. But passing through the midst of them, he went away. They didn't touch him because he walked right through them. Think about this for a moment, okay? Familiarity breeds contempt. A lot of times we appreciate the things we have. We love it. Whoa. We are going through an earthquake right now. Oh, one of those California things. Okay, that was a good one. That was a good one. That was a little bit of shaking. I'm looking up at I always check to see I have a hanging light that is swinging pretty wildly. Woo! You know, let's take a little break really quickly, okay? I'm going to just take a little break and kind of catch myself and make sure everybody's okay. Be back in a couple seconds. You probably won't notice it. Like I said, I don't think you noticed it. Anyway, had to go and check. Yeah, we are used to these in Southern California, yet you never get used to it. I've got adrenaline still going through my system. It was about 20 minutes ago, and I'm still feeling it. It was a good shaker. And anyway, I just listened to news reports. 6.6 on the Richter scale. That is a fairly large earthquake. Happened out in the desert. And so we were kind of like on the outskirts of it and still feeling it. Large, large earthquake. I'd say maybe about epicenters, probably about 100 miles away from us. So from what the initial reports are. Anyway, a good shakeup, and just had to go and kind of catch my breath. Also make sure that everybody's okay while catching your breath. It's interesting. People always ask me, how do you deal with earthquakes in Southern California? I don't know. It's one of those things that just suddenly comes as opposed to having time to prepare for it. It just, boom, it's there. And, well, you, the next steppers, got a chance to go through it with me today. I think that's a first in the 12 years of Next Step Recording. First time we've had an earthquake during the recording. So let's continue what we were saying. I mean, is there a better example than this, right? Familiarity breeds contempt, right? We're familiar with earthquakes, so we're just contemptuous, right? That's going to happen. Not prepared, you know, just kind of, yeah, okay, it's going to come. Yeah. Right? It's the same thing. Look, there's our example. I mean, you, where I'm recording right now, everything was moving. The walls were moving. My desk was moving. And it caught me off guard. So much so that I've, you know, okay, I'm a little bit more relaxed right now. But, yeah, familiarity breeds contempt. People who don't know about earthquakes, they come here and they ask, what do we do? Do we need to get prepared? But for those of us who have lived here all of our lives, okay, it's just part of the landscape. Part of life. So too with Jesus. It was just Jesus, the kid down the street. Contempt. I mean, at the worst case, it's contempt. Let's just say familiarity. Okay, it's just the kid. What can he be doing? What's the goodness that's going to come out of him? But what happens? Point after case after case, where they don't appreciate him, he walks through and he denies them the blessing. Not that he says, I'm not going to bless you. In fact, in the Mark narrative, we see that he goes out and heals the sick. But when you don't want it, you are depriving yourself of that blessing when you don't recognize it. Now, think about that in terms of freedom, right? Being apathetic, not contemptuous only, apathetic. Being condescending, finding the faults in it. Having a disregard for that freedom. You know, there's a lot of 4th of July sales. Forget about freedom. We're going to sell you products. Capitalism is going to work today, right? Neglect. Even hatred. You know, there's what happens? Well, you don't get the blessings of that freedom. You don't get the blessings that are granted to you. And I say this because, you know, I'm in a very unique position. Being the child of immigrants, in other words, people who have come here for that freedom, I know what they struggled through, and I know what the blessings that they sought and the blessings that they found in that freedom. And yet, I see today there's just basically this contempt for it, and so much so that we're willing to cover it up. We're willing to hide and say that, well, freedom is not what it should be, and we will show you what freedom is. And it's turned into a religious holy war on a political field. Yeah, think about that. The metaphors we talk about are very religious in that they have their sides and their positions, but the concepts of freedom, which belong to religion, which belong to God, which is given to us as from God, inalienable rights. And that's what we'll talk about in our second portion. So with that being said, let's take a break right now. I'm going to play a song of the day. And I've been thinking about a lot of the Freedom and America songs. And I've given Ken a list. Let's see what he plays. Thank you. That was beautiful. Ray Charles, of course, doing America the Beautiful. And yes, when we were kids in school, we used to sing those words too, but never with that kind of soul. That was just so beautiful. Ray Charles doing America the Beautiful, a very appropriate song for today, celebrating the 4th of July, the 243rd anniversary of the United States of America. Celebrating with you throughout the world. Yes, it's my honor, my privilege to celebrate this anniversary with all of you, my Next Step listeners. God bless you and God bless the United States of America. Let's continue with the show.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless
are talking about familiarity breeding contempt. Yes. And it happened in the Bible when we saw Jesus. In fact, if you go into the writings of St. Paul, you find that at some point people were familiar with the Holy Sacrament. In other words, with the breaking of the bread and the wine. And then he gets into this whole discussion about unworthily taking. Well, what's that about? It's because people were familiar with it and didn't understand. And it's the same thing that happens inside of many liturgical churches, including the Armenian Orthodox Church, including the Orthodox tradition, the Catholic tradition, the Episcopal tradition, in a sense more in the Episcopal, but definitely in the ancient apostolic communions, where you see that people are contemptuous, not because they have something against it or they're negative, but they're familiar. You've been brought up with it. And I could tell you from the Armenian Church perspective, well, it's the Armenian Church. We belong to it. There's no need to be part of it on a daily basis or on a weekly basis. I belong and that's enough. Well, who says that's enough? Well, we make up our conditions, you know, how many times. I remember as a kid, it was very popular to talk about you take communion on the five major feast days of the church. You're hearing, yeah, my voice is going. I'm telling you, this earthquake kind of rattled me up. I got like a little bit of adrenaline rushing through me. But the feast days of the church. And it was more known that on the two major feast days, Christmas and Easter, that was the time people would come, and it still is in many real respects, but there are five major feast days. And I can't tell you where, but I do know it was written somewhere that, you know, a good communicant should take communion, Holy Communion, on the five major feast days. And then it was later on that it developed, and I would think that this is probably a Vatican II influence on the Eastern tradition too, that, you know, you get the idea that, well, you've come to the celebration and why wouldn't you commune? Why wouldn't you? It would be like akin to going to your grandmother's house and she's laid out a big spread and done all of this for her lovely grandchildren, for them to come and enjoy and partake in this meal. And then you say, sorry, granny, gotta go. No time for food. You know what would happen. Whoa. Well, for some reason, we feel like we can do that. And so when it comes to the church, so in many respects, it's maybe an apathy, an indifference that we have, and contempt would be, I think, on the far end of that scale. But, you know, we're apathetic to things that we know. And certainly in the case of Jesus, as we saw in those couple of scriptural passages I pointed out, Luke chapter 4 and Mark chapter 6, going back to his own people, to his own community, familiarity, it did breed contempt to the point that they weren't able to explore their blessings with him. In the same way, a lot of times we get contemptuous or apathetic toward the beauty that we have granted to us by a country such as the United States. Last Monday night at our Bible study, I invited, because many of our Bible study members are immigrants, are people who have come from different places. We have people who have come from the Middle East, from Iran, from the former Soviet Union. So we went around the room and talked a little bit about contrasting the freedom that we have now as opposed to some of the difficulties that were the oppression under which many of the people lived. And how does that differ from a person, say, who has never known that oppression, never known those difficulties? So it was an interesting discussion, and I maybe challenge that to you, our listeners, today. Let me go one more step today, because I started on something earlier, the limits of freedom. And the limits of freedom, can there be a limit on freedom? And should there be? And we've all heard the example, you can't yell fire inside of a crowded theater, right? You can't bring danger to other people. You can't go into a crowded theater and say, I have a First Amendment right. And let me say, First Amendment for us in America, namely means you have the freedom of speech. You can't go into a crowded theater and say fire and claim that it is a First Amendment right of yours to yell fire. That, no, it's, you're putting a lot of people in danger. There would be panic, pandemonium, people running out. You can't do that. And it's illegal. And you would get prosecuted over here. It is against the law. And you can't get up and say, no, I have a constitutional right to do it. So what? So there are certain restrictions on that freedom. Well, what happens when there are no restrictions on, say, the printed press? I was alluding to it earlier in the podcast today. There's some guy who's out here right now here in the West Coast, and he is putting out a newspaper under the guise of journalism. It's basically a rag sheet that that goes out and starts criticizing the leadership. And it's not a productive criticism. It's like, hey, look at this, look at that, look at what's going on. It's no production because the guy himself is not a church attender. It's not like he's doing it so that the church could be better. And they're treating the church as if it's some kind of open institution, which it's not. It basically has its canons, it has its rules and its regulations, and you can't just take that and just throw it out to the people and say, hey, look, everybody take a look at this. Well, every organization that has its internal rules has its peculiarities, has its own functioning, and you can't just judge that by world standards of open freedom. And I've shared this with you in the past when even my name got thrown into it. And I said very plainly, I've written about it. In fact, I'll put a link on today's show notes. Do read it. It was earlier this year. I said, you know, I chose to be a priest. And therefore, as a priest, I understand that there are certain hierarchies inside of the church. And I have agreed to be obedient. Yeah, that's the word. I've agreed to be obedient to those rules and regulations. And that was my conscious decision. I didn't ask for a court of law outside of the church to come and dictate if there are problems, which there are many, and I've shared with you here on The Next Step, my opinions, but will they change? Will they change? No, the only way to change within the church is to go and work it through the church structure. And my life for the last 35 years, 36, 7 years as a priest has been doing that. In fact, so much so that I was very impressed, if I can just take a little sideline. I was very impressed because one of the things that I've been doing since last summer is digitizing a large collection of my writings and trying to come up with some kind of a document that could be the Armodoxy manual, that could be the In His Shoes manual, basically talking about our faith today, and digitizing a lot of my handwritten documents. I was just amazed this past week when I found some, I found the notes that I had from 1976. So this is just before I went into the seminary. There was a small mini conference or discussion. I don't know what it was, but I do remember it was an evening event. And I was invited to be a speaker. So I'm 20 years old, and the speakers around me were all elderly people. And the topic of it was the future of the Armenian Church. And you look at my notes, it's I don't know if this is good or bad, but it's basically I've kept right on the same on the same statements that you've got to bring Christ in the church, and it has to be a Christ-centered church. This is back in 76. So I was very impressed that, hey, at least we've been consistent. If nothing else, we've been consistent. But along those lines, as I was looking through those papers, I did also find some notes that I had written many years ago. This is like in the 21st century now, okay? If you remember, we did the 777 conference on July 7th, 2007, and we dedicated it to forgiveness. And as a result of that, we came out with this 7x77 logo, which turned into a pin, into bumper stickers. And I remember wearing that pin on my, it was a lapel pin. And I remember wearing it at an event, and I came across a guy that I knew from my early days in the church, like an ACYO, Armenian Church Youth Organization. He had gone to another church across town, another Armenian church, but we knew each other. We knew who we were. And, you know, here it was 20, 25, 30 years later that we were running into each other at some event. And we were talking and he looked and he goes, "Okay, I'll bite." He said, "What is 7 times 7, 7? It was on my lapel. Now, what was interesting with this guy's question is that this guy, I remember as a young kid, this was a guy that used to go to Bible studies organized by non-Armenian church groups. So they were Armenians that were getting together and talking about Bible, you know, Bible's important. And I thought it was very interesting because I do remember his background and being in, so involved in it. And I thought, wow, interesting that he doesn't know what 7 times 77 is. At the very least, if you think that somebody knows the Bible, they go, "Hey, wait a minute, that's 7 times 70, you know? It's not 7 times 77, but nothing. And so I explained that it was the forgiveness formula that Jesus said that we must forgive one another unceasingly 7 times 77. And that's a small little code that we have that we call it the forgiveness formula. And it occurred to me that, you know, part of my youth was with these, a lot of other young Armenians who were taken by the times, spirituality. There was a big movement for Jesus, and there was a big movement for Bible studies. And they would get into these groups, which weren't about teaching the teachings of Jesus, but it was about exclusion. That, hey, look at us. We've got the truth and you don't. And that's a topic for some other day. I do want to get into it more because these were all writings that I found from back in the early days. And there's just so much. There's volumes of it that I want to share with you. But at this point, think about this. When we are so familiar with freedom that we become apathetic, We mock it. We neglect the blessings that it gives. Just like Jesus. So familiar with him that we mock him, that we neglect who he is. We're not worthy of those blessings that come from Christ. The same way we don't understand the blessings that we have in freedom. And the case in point is this guy who's out there who's basically taking advantage of something in his mind is called freedom. And he's hiding behind this thing called the freedom of speech. And what he does in this newsletter that he prints, he mocks and humiliates clergymen. But here, this is how he does it. He doesn't come straight out and say anything. He'll come and put a question mark on it. "Father Voskin is a criminal. Yes?" Question mark. Okay, so putting the doubt seeds in there, spreading them, and then now hiding behind journalism and free speech and saying, wait, I didn't say that. So you can't go and say, "Hey, wait a minute, buddy. What are you talking about? Why are you slandering me like this? Why are you trying to defame me like this? What's going on?" And he says, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just asking questions. Well, that to me is not journalism. That's called fishing. That's you throw out the bait and see what will come up. And you know what? When you throw out the bait, you're going to get all kinds of things. You get a wide variety of fish. Not to say that you're going to get the good fish, right? That's not what journalism is. Journalism isn't a fishing pole. It's not a piece of bait. It's about investigation. It's about looking and having the guts to sign your name to it. I remember earlier in my ministry, a lot of things that I didn't even in right now. You know, you get all kinds of mail. You get all kinds of people. Today, people are a little bit more refined with me, maybe because I'm a little bit more refined, but in the early days, I'd get a lot of mail that was unsigned by a concerned parishioner. I remember one that came from me from an Armenian speaking person who was just ready to blast me up and down and signed it Isha Meru. I guess Isha Meru would be a donkey, a donkey bee? Would that be right? Isha Meru. Yeah, I guess it would be a giant bee, the one that stings really good. So, hey, I'm going to sting you, but I'm not going to put my name to it. There's no courage in that. There's no courage in that. Put your name to it. You know, you believe in something. Say, this is what I believe. And be willing to stand up for it. That's what this freedom guarantees us. And this is what we need to be very vigilant about. Vigilant in the sense that we need to make sure that we never lose sight of the goal. And with that, I want to share with you how this whole thing started, how the United States of America started, a document that I feel is very sacred, because it talks about the wants of a group of people who have seen tyranny, who have seen oppression, and are longing for freedom. There's no taking it for granted. There's no contempt for freedom. No, we want freedom. And this is how they declared it, from the Declaration of Independence, a very sacred document for me. United States was signed in 1776. And I want to go out with sharing this a bit in pieces of this. And I'll put a link on today's show notes so you can read the entire thing. It is just really, really beautiful and well written and crafted, with the John Hancock underneath it, along with many others, signers. I really invite you to read the entire thing. It goes, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate an equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to be the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. There's your democracy. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shewed that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. Pretty intense. The beginning of the Declaration of Independence, the beginning of what we call the United States of America. Happy birthday, beautiful country. I'll be back in a couple moments.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you for all of the beautiful requests, the letters, the kind comments, and yes, oh wow, wasn't that fun last week? Thank you. I'm glad so many of you found that little surprise that I gave you at the end of the show. Yes, it was like the extra added bonus. Like I'm assuming that a lot of people kind of whisk through these last few minutes figuring that, okay, it's just the announcements. No, there's always surprises. And I'm glad so many of you found that surprise. Wasn't that beautiful? Those were the bells of Etchmiadzin. That was a private recording that I made back in 2009. And, yeah, I have that recording. It's going to be interesting when the renovations are done, what's going to happen with the bells, if that same system of bells, I know they're electronic bells, but I'm sure that there's going to be some renovations. So I don't know if this recording will be something that will be unique museum piece in a sense. Anyway, I'm glad you all found it. Hey, listen, today I got a lot to share with you. We're going to be out in the desert this coming weekend. Sunday I'm going to be out in Seattle. But upcoming in September, we have a pilgrimage. And this is from September 16th through the 30th, we're going to be in Armenia, in Artsakh, in a very special edition. Not only Artsakh, but also Jermuk, which you don't get on all kinds of pilgrimages. You don't get them on the usual fare, okay? But also, this is something that you will not find anywhere else. You get to travel to Sasnashen, which is a village right outside of the town of Tallinn. And this is going to be a really unique opportunity to see another part of Armenia that you otherwise wouldn't see. This is the part of the Sasnashen project that we're doing with In His Shoes, and I'm inviting you to be with us. It's a pilgrimage that takes place over the course of 2 weeks. There's information on the web, and I invite you to read more about it. But if you are inclined to go on it, we do need a definite yes in the next couple weeks if you're going to be insured of that rate that we're giving you. This is a special arrangement we did with Qatar Air and with the Marriott and Ramada Inn to ensure that we could get the most amount of people at the best prices that we could. And that price is only guaranteed until July 15th. Hey, if you've ever dreamt about going to Armenia in a pilgrimage, not just a tourist attraction, but to go and learn and to be caught up in the vortexes and to go with me and to go with Father Hartun Tashjian. I mean, you're getting two kind of cool priests that are going and leading this expedition. That's going to be in September 16th through 30th. Look on the show notes. There'll be a link on there to direct you. And please do let us know as quickly as possible. With that being said, I'm sure you're ready to head out to the fireworks in your area if you're celebrating the Independence Day that we are here in the United States. But also, what an adventure this past hour has been, including an earthquake. We've got to go and assess the damages, see what happened. A little rocking and rolling, nothing new for us on the Next Step. But certainly when the earth shakes and the walls move, gives you reason to say, hey, we are living in a real world. And that's what this podcast is about. It's about connecting the dots in this real world. And I hope you enjoyed it as we took a journey today talking about independence, talking about freedom, and talking about our next step. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Vazquez inviting you to join us again next week when we will take
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Does Hagrid come from a cow too? The boy cow or the girl cow?